You're listening to the All Systems Go podcast, the show that teaches you everything you need to know to put your business on autopilot. Learn how to deploy automated marketing and sales systems in your business the right way with your host, the professor of automation himself and founder of Automation Bridge, Chris Davis.
All right, welcome to another episode of the All Systems Go podcast, where we invite startup founders, digital marketers, and business owners in general that are using technology, software, and strategies to grow their business by way of automated marketing and sales strategy. I'm your host, Chris L. Davis, the founder of Automation Bridge, and today's guest is Dr. Josh Satterley from Las Vegas, Nevada. Josh is a chiropractor that's helped thousands of chiropractors understand the importance of communication and the role it plays in relationship building. Josh, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Chris, it's an honor to be here. It's a pleasure. I'm very excited about melding these two worlds together. You are the guy that can make anything happen technologically. And I'm lucky enough to, you know, in the chiropractic world and all medicine, we have a ton of access to research that we know is very accurate, was done very well. Mm-hmm. And in that, I've been lately looking at communication and the role of communication and trust building with patients. And I just want to talk about how I think that can affect people who are building automations, communication strategies, emails, text messaging, all this marketing stuff. Because if you don't have trust in the doctor's office, you can't get your patients to do anything. And if you don't have trust in the world of marketing automation and whatnot, the needle never moves, right? Yeah. So it's this melding of the two. And man, I've listened to your podcast a bunch of times and I'm like, this Chris guy, not just, you know, he's not just good looking. He's actually pretty darn smart.
I appreciate that, Josh. Appreciate that. And I must say, when we talk about trust, as important as it is in marketing, what is one of the cornerstones, right? The like, know, and trust factor, the cornerstones of marketing, effective marketing, that is. Trust in a doctor is on another level, right? Like this could be life or death if you trust the information that your doctor is giving you to literally save your life. So don't in any means want to overshadow that. And I want to also give you the floor really quick, Josh. Tell us about your trajectory into the practice that you're in now. What led up to it? Were there signs in the past that showed that you really paid a little more special attention to building trust? Was there stories that you could think of, like, you know, and that was the first time I realized trust is important. What's the story?
I will tell you, I think one of the advantages of being in medicine and one of the disadvantages is you're dealing with people. And in the world of chiropractic, if you do the wrong thing to people, they hurt worse the next day or that time in their office, in your office. Mm. Right. So, I'm sure that you've had clients where it didn't work out, but, they weren't crying and unable to move and all that. And I've seen it in my office. I've done it. I've screwed people up. And I work every day not to ever do that again. You know, that emotional load of like, so I had a friend come in. I remember this November 1st of like 2010. And the reason I know it was November 1st is the night before was Halloween, right? October 31st. And she had dressed up as a showgirl. And, you know, it's Las Vegas, dressed up as a showgirl. I mean, this is like perfect, right? And I guess from like carrying, you know, the big like feather thing they wear on their hat, that big, I don't know what to call it, but like headpiece. Yep. Well, after carrying that around all night and, you know, walking from party to party, she woke up the next morning and couldn't move her neck. I mean, it was just totally jacked. So I start doing everything that I know to work on her. You know, I'm working on the muscles and adjusting her, cracking, popping. She stands up and whatever movement she walked in with had now reduced by 50%. And I'm like, okay, that's not supposed to happen. So I'm like, well, lay back down here. And I work even harder, right? I'm digging in, I'm pushing, I'm stretching, I'm, you know, her neck is turning. the color of a tomato, and I'm like, oh yeah, we're good here. She stands up, and now a single tear just rolls down her eye on her cheek. And I go, how you doing? And she does what a lot of people do, which is she said, I'm fine. Yeah, it's okay. Now at that point, I should have just cut my losses and said, hey, I'm not helping you. But Chris, you got to remember, I'm dumb. So I decided to go a third round with this woman and just totally gork her. And she was a good friend of mine. And that memory sticks with me every day. Whenever I go to a conference, I think about that woman. We can just call her Joni for now, because she looked like Joni from Joni Loves Chachi. But every time I think, like, I got to get more accurate because of that. I don't want another Joni. You know, I gotta learn this skill because I don't want another Joni, and all those things. And that's what helped me dive into this communication thing, because the other side of the coin is, strangely, I can do the right thing for you as a patient. So if you come in with an injury, I can do the absolute right thing. But if you don't believe that it's the right thing, yeah, it may not be nearly as effective. Heck, it can be totally non-effective. And I can tell you, like, no, man, we hit all the check boxes. This is exactly what you need. But if you think you need something else and I don't touch on that, your belief system is going to be a whole lot lower. So I've really been studying it because of those experiences and of those times that I was not, you know, I don't want to like diminish my ability to get referrals from your podcast, but I have improved my skills, you know, but there were some dark days, man. I don't know if you had that when you got into like your business and consulting, but screwing up a client's website or their automations, or the automations run wild, and it's just like, dang. So
I'd have to say the equivalent. I won't say the client's name or even the time, because we all make mistakes, even in our expert areas, or expert years. But there's no worse feeling for me than recommending the wrong software. Mm-hmm. And this took me so long. I would go into these engagements and I would recommend the software that I was familiar with, the software that I could use, and I could make it do all of these things. And then when I'm not touching it, when I'm not doing it, they have no clue how to use it. Or I've recommended something that I hadn't tried and it looked really good. So I was like, oh, this will work. And the results of the software, or lack thereof, I should say, become my reputation. The software didn't work. Chris doesn't know what he's doing. And that has been probably the hardest lesson earlier in my career, which is why now I sit down. Josh, you won't catch me mentioning any name of software until I've got a great understanding of your business model, your strategy, and some form of performance that your marketing is currently doing. Because it's a form of malpractice in my industry. It's
I love like it.
Never prescribe technology or software before strategy.
Yeah.
You just don't do it, you know?
It's funny you mention that, because one of the things that we've discovered after looking at all the research in the medicine is the most successful patient-doctor relationship is when there is a discussion of autonomy. And autonomy is, what are you willing to do to get yourself better? And that can go everywhere from like, so you think about, like, I don't know if you've ever dealt with a family member who had cancer, right? There are people that get cancer and they're like, hey, listen, I'll eat any green juice. I'll run 5 miles a day. I'll do whatever. I just don't want to go through chemotherapy, right? And then there's the opposite side. They say, hey, man, you can get me as close to death with chemotherapy as I need to be, but I won't do other things, right? And having that conversation. So I think about, like, you know, the olden days. So I'm been an Infusionsoft user or Keep user for, man, it's got to be like 7 years now.
Wow.
And the olden days of what you had to do before, like, Zapier existed, right?
My goodness.
Yeah, but your willingness, Chris's willingness to do active parts of that are much higher, right? It's like, hey, Chris, what are you willing to do for your business? Could you log in every day and do these four things and just run these saved searches? And you're like, absolutely. That's not a problem. But then I would imagine you go to one of your clients and you go, hey, would you log in every day if you're, I don't know, an attorney's office, right? Would you log in every day for an hour and go through these saved searches? Well, as soon as you say save searches, their eyes get big. They go quiet, you know, and they're like, what? And, yeah, and they're thinking in their mind, where am I going to find an hour a day? I got to deal with clients. I got to get, you know, go to court. I got to do X, Y, and Z. And that, you know, and it's like, okay, well, let's at least have this conversation about autonomy. What are you willing to do? What am I willing to do? And how do we set up that plan? And that's the whole reason I want to be on your podcast is the only advantage I have in this world is something called PubMed. And PubMed is just this clearinghouse of all the research that's been done in the medical industry, right? Doesn't matter if you're looking at diabetes or foot health or anything. All this research was done really well, right? And so we can rely on it. It's not internet marketing research, you know, where 111 people prefer this brand of software. It's like, okay, that's not true. So it's done really well. And also it gives us insight to what people want. And that autonomy thing, I think, expands to every aspect of our lives. Like, what are you willing to do in a marriage? What are you willing to do at the gym? What are you willing to do with your kids? But really applies in this sense of marketing automation and just in general. I love the fact that, by the way, that you're not just marketing automation, but automation in general. We got to have that belief of what are you willing to do? Because there's some cats out there that are willing to do anything and everything and work, you know, grind it out for 11 hours every day just working on their systems and copywriting. And I'm like, man, hats off to you. I ain't like that.
Yeah. And this word autonomy is really good for this conversation, because in the words that you're using is, what are you willing to do and what are you not? Right. Mm-hmm. This is the same thing that I asked my technology. Wait a minute. What are you willing to do here? I'm looking at your features. I know what I need you to do. What can you do and what can't you? So I understand there's going to be this hybrid relationship of manual input or manual maintenance or manual management and automated execution to shape that perspective or to have the accurate expectation. Let me ask you this. You've got a four-part apology framework that I want to talk about. But before we get into it, you mentioned Keep by Infusionsoft, and it piques my ears because a chiropractor saying Keep by Infusionsoft by Keep is very oxymoronic, right? It's like chiropractor, Keep. Two can't, you know. Where along the line did you get the know-how, the willingness, just that drive to really tackle a CRM for your business when most chiropractors are probably using the standard, you know, proprietary system that's given?
Yeah, I would say that for all those listening that are into the automation thing, that if you work with chiropractors, physical therapists, doctor's offices, dentists, all that, a mistake I commonly see my peers do is use our EHR, our electronic health records software, as a cobbled together CRM. It works really well once the person is in care. Like once you've done an exam and rendered a diagnosis, it maintains the dates of service, the codes of service, what the diagnosis is, details about them. You know, you can put in there, oh, Chris has a dog named Rover. He loves talking about it. You know, you can do a lot of stuff there. When it falls off is before their patient. So marketing events or like, hey, if you do a workshop or talk out there, it falls apart. And after discharge, it typically falls apart, right? So think about if you go to the dentist in between your cleanings, that EHR just doesn't work well. So anyway, so quick business lesson. I was a chiropractor and I was like, you know, everybody was talking about continuity of care and membership. And I was like, man, I just don't like these chiropractic memberships. Come in and I adjust you and all this stuff. Because as soon as you realize, like, I'm just treating you like an ATM machine, like you're gone. I don't have continuity. So I said, well, what's something that's complimentary? And I realized, you know, all of my people, they love to move. They want to move more. They want to be active. So I said, hey, a gym is perfect. So we blended a couple of years ago, our clinic and a gym. So our 1200 square foot clinic would open up to a 3,500 square foot gym. And it was perfect continuity, right? Like as soon as if your shoulder is injured, I fix your shoulder, put you out to the gym. Now use your shoulder, make your shoulder stronger, make it more flexible, all that stuff. Well, when you get a gym, up to that point, I got all my business from a chiropractic thing from referrals, man, word of mouth and referrals. Had some doctors that liked me, had some, you know, just a bunch of people that liked me and sent clients left and right. When you open a gym, you realize, there is a whole prequel to this idea of a new customer. Like, this may take months and years. Holy smokes. I need to send out, you know, invites and newsletters and all this stuff. So I went to the School of Hard Knocks on gym ownership. And luckily I found somebody named, I don't know if you've come across a guy named Sean Greeley. He owns NPE, Net Profit Explosion. Okay. It's just like a niche consulting firm for gyms, right? Okay. And he was a huge user of Infusionsoft and enticed me with the, hey, use this Infusionsoft. I'll give you the campaigns. I'll give you the emails. I'll give you everything. In your life, you'll hit one button in the morning, and man, your life's going to be easy, baby. And so I was naive enough to believe that. I signed up for Infusionsoft. I clicked. And nothing happened. So, but I was just too hard-headed to, like, you know, do it. And there were people who were kind of over the you know, the adoption phase that I could see were having success. So kind of hacked through that. And I think a lot of things, like, I always say this to friends of mine who get a CRM. A CRM is like a bike, right? If you're 6 years old and I take you out in the garage on Christmas Day and I go, Chris, I bought you a bike. And I, you hold this bike up, I let go, it falls over. And you're like, what the hell is that thing? Oh man, this is going to change your life. And like, you pick it up and you let go and it falls over.
Yeah.
I think an early CRM is like that. You got to have campaigns run. You got to have contacts going through. You got to have momentum, just like on that bike. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, this makes so much sense.
There you go.
And yeah, I would never go back. But when you're on those sales calls with the CRMs and software, they kind of brush over the falling and skinning your knee, you know, part of learning how to ride a bike, right? They just tell you about, like, you'll ride to work, you'll ride and take you half the time. It'll, you know, you're going to have, you're in such good shape, Chris, man, you're going to love this bike. And it's like, what's it look like the first 2 weeks? Looks like a lot of bloody knees and banged elbows and everything, but we won't talk about that. Just, you know, let me show you a picture of Lance Armstrong here. That's a guy that rides a bike. And you're like,
Yes, so it's one of the hardest conversations to have because it seems to be the software people like to go the lightest on. And it's like, this is the home. This is where your contacts live. This is their residence in your business. This is, you know, you might want to pay special attention. And if your business is in an Arctic environment, you may not want a light tent like Google Sheets as a CRM. They will freeze to death. They will get cold and you'll never be able to close anything. So another podcast, actually a previous podcast, you know, I go on my rant about CRM. But for you, Josh, I really am interested in this four-part apology framework that builds trust through your communications. So you are unique because, and I was intentional with this, there's other marketers out there that have different terminologies for, you know, nurturing leads and building trust. And, you know, they've coined these phrases and all kind of words for these sequences and follow-up sequences, which is fine. I have nothing against it. But for you in your industry, what I want to do is I want to listen to it and then look for parallels on how I would actually implement this as you're talking. So listeners, Josh and I have not had any conversation about this. I made sure I stayed totally ignorant to this four-part framework. So as you break down this framework, Josh, I'll jump in here and there with some automation implications of how it could possibly be implemented. But the floor is yours, Josh.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that's important too, Chris, is this idea that, you know, in our research, we found looking at communication in that doctor-patient relationship. And I think this goes everywhere. It's just, we have this research that's already been done. So why not tap it, right?
Yep.
One of the things is this idea of, I'm sure you've heard of like malpractice, right? Mm-hmm. And the idea of malpractice is if I do the wrong thing for you, I could get sued, right? And you as a patient, if that person does the wrong thing, I can pursue them in court. Sounds good. What we found in the research is because we're dealing with psychology, we're dealing with patients who have feelings, I could get sued even if I do the right thing. So even if I do the right medicine, I could still get sued. And if I do the wrong thing, there's a chance I won't get sued. So it's this funny thing. And I think that that extends to people, like what makes people, for example, in your world, you could build the right system for somebody with all the right automations, make their life easy. And it literally gets to a point where you click play. But because they told you that I want blue buttons everywhere and you put red buttons, they would go, you did this job horribly, right? You did malpractice. And you're like, no, build everything you need. It's going to help your real estate business take off. And they're like, but I said red button, you know? And so there's the three D's of when people will sue you in medicine. And I think it's important to listen to this for everybody that's like in the automation world. First one is in that patient relationship, just picture this. Let's say you bring your mother in to see me, right, Chris? And is your mother still alive and you care about her?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, perfect. Number one, if I am demeaning to the patient as a doctor, there's a really high likelihood, 60% chance, I will get sued. Now, if I was demeaning to your mother, but I still do the right work and get her to feel better, there's a good chance you're still going to go like, forget that guy. I hate that guy. I'm going to sue him, right? So demeaning. Number two, devaluing your beliefs. And this beliefs can be a lot of things, but specifically like lifestyle choices and or religion would be a good one. So if you say, hey, listen, my religion doesn't let me take antibiotics. And I go, well, that's the only way, Chris, you got to do it. You know, I don't care what your religion says. I'm devaluing your faith, right? Which obviously you're like, hey, now antibiotics could be the right medicine, but they're not the right medicine for me right now. And so devaluing, demeaning. And then the last one that, oh man, it's slipping my mind. It's devaluing, demeaning, and oh, Chris, I just forgot. I'm going to have to look it up here in my thing. So, but the point I want to make is, make sure as you're, maybe if you're doing this, you know, if you're working in the world as an automation service provider, which I love that term, you can't devalue what the people do and you don't want to be demeaning in that thing. Because the whole reason you're getting hired is you're the expert by a long shot, right? Like you come with these CRM solutions, these automation stuff, the things you can do is like wizardry. But you ever seen Saturday Night Live has that IT guy that's supposed to be like he's the world's meanest IT guy or whatever. And he just comes in like, how hard can this be? Command shift, you know, semicolon pound. I don't understand. That's how you print. And it's like, man, this is like so funny that we, you know, that happens. But
yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because it's so easy to do. Any industry, you could say it's easy to do, but specifically with technology, because one, often how people use it is not a good indicator of their level of understanding. Right. Absolutely. I have seen people use a computer and I've done something as simple as control V and paste it. And they're like, what did you just do? Right. And I'm like, you've been using a computer for 20 years. You didn't know that keyboard shortcut for paste. So technology is one of those things. There's no mandate for understanding to use it. Most people are using the same tool or software 100 ways, and you couldn't anticipate 98 of them. Right.
Absolutely,
so it's very easy to come off as demeaning and devaluing when you look at somebody and say, why wouldn't you just do that? Why wouldn't you just click that button? Why would you choose that for a CRM? Right. Like it is super easy to come off as any one of those D's.
And I would tell you, like, I even feel that like I go to these user conferences and I would say I'm a rookie. Like we go to the bike analogy. I can ride a BMX bike around my neighborhood, man. I'm not like, I'm sure you are like the Sean White of automation, you know, CRMs. Like you can do a half pipe backflip, you know, whatever. And I'm just like, hey, man, I can put a contact in. I can hit a couple different steps. I can send a few messages. I can tag them. Cool. Yep. And you're like, yawn. But for me, that's enough. But I go to some of these conferences and I would tell you that the speakers that are the most welcoming and warm and invite everybody to come in wherever they are, do so well. And the ones that are, you know, what would you say, are kind of like, oh, everybody knows how to do this, you know, like, oh, I can't believe you wouldn't know this. And it's like, I'm like in the back, like trying to hide. And I'm a big dude. I can't hide, you know? I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, well, okay, sorry. Like, I didn't mean to be rude, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, when I speak in person and even on virtual, I always preface it and say, hey, this is a no shame zone, right?
Yeah.
And no penalty for previous performance because you didn't know any better. But mm-hmm. now you're here to learn. Nobody's shaming anyone. Let's figure out how to make the path forward much better. So spot on. All right. So you've got your framework. Walk us through it and just kind of talk us through what this four-part apology framework is.
Yeah. So the first thing, so what this says is if we forget to include aspects of the, of this apology, they will not feel complete. And so I think that this can be useful in a lot of different things, you know. I mean, like if a guy was like married or something, you know, you could figure this out. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, hypothetically, of course, Chris, I know that you're a perfect, perfect husband, you know, but.
we'll keep that between me and you, Josh.
Yeah. So the first thing is that. Validation of what the other party is saying. So number one, validating. So this research really comes. If you've ever heard of autoimmune conditions, they're a condition where your own body's attacking you, right? So like Crohn's disease would be autoimmune, thyroid condition, like the problem is inside your own body. Well, when you look at the research of the average time it takes for somebody to be diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. So let's say, again, you take your mother in to see the doctor and you're like, something's off with her. And she's telling you, Chris, I'm just not feeling right. What do you think the average length of time is before somebody gets diagnosed with an autoimmune condition? Accurately diagnosed. Just throw it on an idea.
5 minutes.
Keep going.
15.
On average, when a person goes into a doctor's office and says, I have something wrong with me, right? Now, autoimmune condition is hard because, like, it's your own body. So a lot of things are working right. There's just something that's not working wrong.
Yeah.
On average, it takes 7 years for them to achieve it.
Accurately. Diagnosis. Yeah. Okay. Accurately. I was thinking malpractice and somebody just said, give them a label. I got you. All right.
Typically they go in, they say something's wrong with me. The doctor checks them out and says, no, you're fine. Right. No, you're fine. And so along those 7 years, now that's the average. So, you know, there's a lot of cats going 12 years. Maybe some get lucky at 4 years, but can you imagine taking your mom to 7 years of appointments before anybody ever was accurate about it? Man. So one of the most important thing is to validate their position. Hey, Chris, I know I agree with you. Something's wrong. I agree with you. You are correct. Something is wrong. So if I come to you, let's just say in the business world, I go, Chris, something about my CRM system is not working right. The first step is validating me. Oh, I understand that you are not seeing your CRM do what you want it to do, right? I don't want to feel crazy in the situation. And we go back though in those 7 years, most of those people are diagnosed with two separate psychological conditions before they're accurately diagnosed with their condition.
Wow.
Right? And just drawing those correlatives, how many times have you gotten calls from clients or heard about clients that tell you like, oh, this guy came in and screwed it all up and it doesn't work anymore? No, probably didn't screw it up. He might even made it more efficient, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't validate what they were looking for, right? He didn't say that it's okay for you to not understand control V. It's okay. Chris is going to show you. And so the first thing is that validation, right?
I like that. Now I will add the automation inclination there is, I tell people all the time, when you're building out the customer journey, you're always listening to what people are saying and what they're doing. So you need to be paying attention to that behavior so that you can validate it. If somebody went to your pricing page 3 times and then opts in to your newsletter or whatever the case may be, how well positioned are you to validate the fact that you've seen, hey, you've expressed interest in the pricing, in our pricing model. Would you like to set up a call? But some people aren't listening. Everything that you're saying naturally, it's active listening. As a person, I know how to do that. Do you know how to make your technology actively listen to the behaviors and desires of your contacts as they're going through? All right, great. Got it.
Yeah. So that's the first step. If you don't do that, so think about an argument with your wife you've had recently, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's going on and on. She probably is just looking for validation. Like you say, you know what? I know this was a big deal to you, right? Yep. I know the unloaded dishwasher was a big deal and we're going to move, you know, we're going to move forward. So anyways, then the next thing sounds silly, but saying you're sorry, actually saying the words, I apologize, or I am sorry, or, you know, I screwed up and I realized that. If you ever hear like a politician speak, right, or you hear somebody and they miss that part, it doesn't matter what else they say. They will go, hopes and prayers are with the families and we're blah, blah, blah. And you're like, just say the words, I'm sorry, I apologize, right? But stop avoiding it like it's going to make anybody better, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because sometimes people are like, oh, don't ever admit you were wrong. But you can still say like, hey, Chris, I'm sorry this cost you some sales. I'm sorry that you missed these, you know, that we can't find those contacts. I'm sorry for X, Y, Z. And in my case, it's like, Chris, I'm sorry I didn't see these symptoms with your mom sooner. And you go, okay. Now, I'm not saying you're 100% better, right? We don't have a perfect relationship, but at least I open the door to things getting better. And I think if you don't say sorry or don't say I apologize, you're just keeping the door shut to moving forward.
That's good. That's good, Josh. That's taking ownership. And this one would be an automation service provider inclination here. And it's fighting imposter syndrome, right? When you're providing the service of automation and maybe you thought it was going to work, or perhaps that zap didn't fire, or you took a gamble on another tool, or maybe you just got in over your head. You said you could do it in 2 weeks. It's taken you 2 months and now it's been a whole year. Just coming to the table and saying, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I promised this deadline. I keep missing it. I can only imagine the impact that it's having on your business and the state of emotion that you've gone through dealing with me. And the fact that you're still here lets me know that I still have a chance to get it right. Right? Like, just put it on the table, acknowledge, as you mentioned, validate. I guess we're putting one and two together. Mm-hmm. But this is how we human effectively.
Yeah. Right? And the other thing about it is like when people, it's not just like, think about in the emails people send and like, you know, I'm trying to think of a situation where you would automate an email, but so many times they're like, you know, you get these like around the holidays, I had ordered a bunch of stuff online and I get these things from Amazon, like, hey, your delivery is running late, but on its way. I'm like, cool. Yep. If it would say, hey, sorry, your delivery is running late, but we'll get there soon, I'll be like, all right, hey, listen, stuff happens. But because, I don't know, maybe I'm just, being trivial here, but I'm like, just say it, man. Yeah. And if you ever watch the news, you hear somebody apologizing without apologizing, I would say that one of the common themes is they don't say the word sorry. So that's it. Now, the next step. So validate, say sorry, or I apologize, right? The third step is recognize why, not what, but why you were wrong. Now, I say not what was wrong. So you don't go, man, Chris, I'm sorry that you have 100,000 spam contacts in your thing. I mean, spam contacts happen. You're like, yeah, they do. But you were the guy hired to fix it. And it's like, why it's wrong. Hey, Chris, I'm sorry that you have 100,000 contacts. And I know that that cost you extra money in your database. And we're going to have to do a bunch of cleanup. And I see that it costs you money, right? Mm-hmm. Or I know that it shut down your whole system and it took 4 hours out of your day for all your real estate agents or whatever the reason is, right? But why it was wrong. So what is the feeling I have, not what was the action occurring, right? So if I throw a book at you and I say, Chris, you're an idiot, and I throw a book at you, don't go, Chris, I'm really sorry that book flew through the air. I'm sorry it hit you. It's like, none of that stuff happened. If you hadn't, it's like, hey, I should not have lost my temper. Yep. That was the problem, right?
Absolutely.
That recently happened with that.
Man.
Yeah, with that. People were saying this on the news about the SUV that ran some people over or something. It's like, that is the action, but the why is what we want to hear, you know? Like, why did that happen? So it's validate, say the words, I'm sorry, why things were wrong.
Yep. And real right? quick, right there, yep. I will say this. Your automations are not going to run perfectly. You're not going to be, you know, get it right every time. Yeah. To this day, and listeners, if you have received an email from me like this, this is you and I's little time to laugh. But there are times where my automation will fire a email off erroneously, or maybe there's a case that I just forgot. I was like, oh, I had the date trigger. I didn't realize a leap year, or, you know, I didn't realize that this specific thing would throw the automation off. So then people get it, and people are, you know, they'll respond, hey, Chris, did you mean to send this? Hey, why am I getting this? And I always do what you said. I say, I'm sorry, but to the point of recognizing why you were wrong, what I like to do, Josh, is tell them exactly what happened. Sorry, you weren't supposed to get that email. My bad. I actually had the automation set up to send it tomorrow, and for whatever reason, I forgot to add the wait state. They appreciate it. It's like, yeah, I'm owning
almost
it.
Almost like you're getting down to that very point of,
yep.
It's not general. It's specific to this thing that didn't happen.
Yes. Yeah. And it positive response every single time. In fact, I've actually got customers out of that. They're like, nice. Oh, he knows how to fix what's wrong. And I'm just trying to let them, like, I'm truly sorry, because I don't want my automations to, you know, have a mind of their own. I've got a brand that I'm upholding. Listen, I'm supposed to be the one that has it together, but I have no issue at all not being perfect. Zero.
Well, that's good, because none of us are, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, that kind of leads perfectly to the next step, the fourth step, which is to talk about what will change or what you'll do next time. So seeing how your wrong actions affect you and how you're going to change for the next time.
Yeah.
So if I threw that book at you and I go, Chris, I lost my temper. I'm very sorry. I realize that I shouldn't have lost my temper. Next time, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to use these words. Chris, I'm very frustrated with you right now. Instead of holding it in and throwing a book at you. Or next time, I'm going to walk away. And that's not disrespectful to you. I just need some time to let my head get right. And I want to come back and talk to you. Okay? So next time, you might see me leave, but it's not out of disrespect for you. In fact, I'm trying to come to you with a better thing. Right? In business, I'm sure you can think of ways you'll say next time. Right? Next time, we'll do it this way. Or we'll do it better. Now, that opens up an interesting door, because you got to live up to what you just said, right?
Yeah.
So if I throw a book at you again, it's like, okay, well, this dude's not really sorry. He's an a-hole.
yeah.
You know? So if you say, hey, next time we will schedule that, you know, I'll double check the what'd you say, the wait?
The wait state. Yep.
Wait state. But you still brush over it. It's like, okay, well, you're not really sorry, right? So this one probably has the biggest amount of work coupled to it. But if you think about this, again, go back to, like, you probably have like a perfect marriage and never argued with your wife, but
I wish.
Yeah. But if you think about it, that's a lot of, especially in an intimate relationship like that, like doctor patient or husband wife, or, you know, they want to know what will change, because the amount of change that you recognize is how they're kind of equating that validation step. So if you truly validate what I believe, hey, listen, I'm sorry. So let me do this from a perspective, like if you brought your mom in, Chris, I'm sorry that it's taken me so long to figure out what was really going on with your mom, right? I validate. I said I was sorry already, right? Now I need to say why I made that mistake. I wasn't paying attention to all these signs. And frankly, this, I'm going to steal your trick here. I wasn't correlating the blood work as big of a player as it should have been, right? Next time she comes in, what I'm going to do is check the blood work first. And in fact, because of this conversation, I'm going to actually check the blood work of all my patients moving forward if they have these same complaints. Now, you weren't pissed at me about your mom, but how good do you feel about my apology right now in this fictional situation?
Yeah. I feel, you know what, even you just saying that, I feel good about this situation. And there's something about me being the guinea pig here that is the cause of you changing your way. And it's like, hey, if we hadn't done this, now everybody else is going to be better, you know,
right,
for what we just experienced. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can see how that'll extend to a lot of things. But the the little acronym I always think of for people is, a lot of times we want to just say, Chris, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. And we want to move on. But there's not those 4 points, right? Because if I just say, I'm sorry, I'm not digging into why you're so upset. And I'm not giving you the satisfaction knowing, hey, this dude actually got it. You know, I'm just using this word, sorry. And you're like, okay, this doesn't do anything for me. Right. So I always say, very sorry won't work. Right. So V is validate. S is sorry. You got to say you're sorry. And then won't work. WW is why you were wrong and what you'll do in the future to change.
Yeah. Man,
BSWW,
super powerful. I'm just thinking about my automation service providers. I mean, we've got countless client stories, right? And the good thing about the group that my group of people is, we never talk down to anybody, even though they're not in the room, or even though it may be their fault. There's always this sense of, okay, what went wrong? Mm-hmm. So this framework is extremely valuable, and it's appropriate. It's coming from someone in the service industry, that skills are great to have. They may open the door. May open the door, but your ability to build and keep trust is going to keep that door open and you in the room. And this is the part. I get it. Automation is sexy. Let's send some emails, add some tags, do some things. But when things go a little sideways for your client and it's your fault, right? Like you were the one that they paid top dollar to get this done. They need the assurance that you're the type of person that's going to take ownership, validate the bad experience that you've caused on their behalf and their brand, apologize for it. Go take the time. You may not be able to do it all in one setting. Maybe it takes time for you to go and research what went wrong. Why did this break? Like, give me just 2 days. I promise you, I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. You go back, figure out what happened, speak to it specifically, and then have a game plan going forward. If you execute on that game plan going forward, that's going to assure them even more. Okay, this is the person. Because one, I don't have to wonder what's broken or if something is broken. They'll own it. And two is, they've shown that they'll go fix it. They'll put the effort in to identify what's wrong, and then they'll go fix it. Now, that creates the environment for you to continue to perform and provide your service at a top tier level. So, oh man, that was good. That was good, Josh. Good. Oh man, I greatly appreciate it. Tell me this. When you, no comparison, I like to think that everybody is always in competition of them of yesterday, right? So you're trying to beat yourself out. But what is one thing that you can say that you experience that your counterparts who don't use a CRM don't get to experience in your specific industry?
Oh man. All right. All right. So we just talked all about apologies and all that thing. And if you have a few more minutes, I'll tell you a story on the front end of this, because I think it can apply as well. So the sorry stuff is usually midway or at the end of a relationship, right? The person's already come in. You've already done business with them in our sense. So we consult with some chiropractors and physical therapists about, essentially, it is a CRM, like that's how you would say it technologically, but all we say is patient communication, right? The patient pathway. So it always goes in the same way. Like, hey, you hear about a doctor, you schedule your appointment, you go in for an exam, then you do follow-ups, then you get discharged, right? It always follows that same pathway. The magic. So in that research, and I think this is really good for anybody who does sales calls, there's research out of a pre-appointment text message, right? And this has been done repeatedly in medicine, but just a pre-appointment text message within about 2 days of the appointment. So you make an appointment for next Wednesday, you're getting a pre-appointment text message between Monday and Tuesday, right? Saying, hey, Chris, you got this. Now, what's crazy is the place that you saw the most power in this was in Africa. They have a lot of these AIDS clinics where people who have HIV or AIDS need to come in to these clinics and get care. So what they found is if they send that pre-appointment text message, the show-up rate increased by 50%. Now, this is a huge deal to them because they can't make a difference in the spread of HIV if they get people to sign up. But think about this. Of all the appointments that you would have difficulty getting somebody to, it's embarrassing. It's, you know, that there's going to be a ton of follow-up, right? This isn't like a one and done kind of deal. There's all this pressure on it. But that text message they saw reduced no-shows by 50%. So if anybody's like, hey, I have sales appointments, I want to do 50%. Now, here's the kicker. You asked me, like, what do you see that some people don't see? We work with our clients, and you can imagine, if I just say, like, Chris Davis has an appointment at 1045 at this address, that's pretty boring, right? Mm-hmm. But text or MMS allows you to send a picture, right? So we encourage our people to send one of three things. Here's the one. Hey, you're going to see Dr. Davis at 1045. Send a picture of Dr. Chris Davis, right? And all that the message says is, hey, I'm excited to see you at 1045, or I look forward to meeting you at 1045. Maybe that doesn't work for their situation. So the other thing is, who is the first person they'll see when they walk in that office? So, you know, sometimes medical offices have a big desk.
Yep.
There's one person doing reception. There's four different doctors. Just send, hey, this is Stacy. She's our patient coordinator. Yeah. When you walk in, head to her. Now, just think about, you walk into that office with your mom again. If you know by face who you're supposed to check in with, how much anxiety just reduced?
Yep.
A bunch, right? The one other that we find actually works well is, especially if you work with an older population, so over, you know, 50, 60, because in medicine, we're seeing a lot of people, but as you age, you kind of see a big decline. And if you have a difficult to get to or difficult to find office, we encourage people, take a picture from the outside, from the parking lot, and circle, like, use this elevator, you go through this door. You know, don't use these stairs, something like that. Because I'm sure that everybody listening has been to one of those appointments where, you know, they tell you the address and you're like, man, you're a liar. You're not at this address. You're around the corner, 500 meters away, it feels like. And if you're, I mean, in the world of chiropractic, like, some people have back pain, it's tough to walk. So asking them to just traipse, you know, over this stairway, up the stairs, across, through that door, it's rude. It's frankly rude. And we have the technology. Like, if I tell you, hey, Chris, all I want is to send a text message with a picture 24 hours before my patient's appointments. Like, if I give you that quote unquote challenge, how hard is that technologically to solve?
Oh, super simple, right?
Yeah.
Just super straightforward for us.
Every one of my clients that do that, every one of them comes back to me with stories of, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that. I wish all my doctors did this, or thank you so much. This was so helpful. Or, oh, thanks. I'm really looking forward to talking to you about it. And the other thing it does for my clients, all doctors are under the pressure of the clock, right? Like, we can't just spend as much time as we want. Well, building that little bit of trust on the front end, sending that text message oftentimes reduces the need to just small talk in the office by about 5 minutes. Well, that 5 minutes has a ton of value to the doctor, right?
Wow.
But if you know who you're seeing, I'm going to see Dr. Chris Davis, and, you know, I see a smiling face, I walk in the room, it's not my first time seeing him.
Yeah.
Boom. I have so much more trust. And it's like, oh, especially if you're good and you know what the patient's name is.
Yeah.
And you say, you got to be tricky here, but if you can say, oh, Stacy, it's nice to meet you. Yeah, I texted you yesterday.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You and I know that was automated, but if that magic happens,
oh man.
It's like, oh well, yeah.
That's what we automate for, that magic right there.
Yeah.
It's like the alley-oop. The automation throws it up, and at the time where the human and interaction is called upon, just slam dunk it.
Yeah.
Just make that connect. Hey, yesterday, I'm glad you got the text message. It's so great to meet you. They're like, oh my gosh, this office feels totally different. And, you know, I really like this guy.
Again, like, if I talk to somebody like you or somebody who's been through your program, like, setting that up, you could do 100 other things for my office. I know that, 1,000 things, but just do that. And then walk me through. Here's one thing I think that sometimes automatic service providers neglect is, once you set up this automation, how do you want the people in the office to act, or what should they say to support the automation that's running?
To support the automation, yes.
Yeah. So if I know a text went out that said, "Hey, this is Dr. Josh. I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow at 10:45. If I walk into that exam room and I go, "Oh, Chris, it's nice to meet you. Yeah, I'm the one that texted you yesterday," or
"Yeah,
I sent that text yesterday." The magic that happens at that moment makes the automation worth 100 times more, makes my work worth 100 times more. And I'll tell you this, one thing that I don't think that, a lot of times on the front end of a medical procedure, you ask all what we call red flag questions. Like, do you have any numbness? Have you, is there any blood in your urine or your stool? Like, these are big deal questions. We're asking, like, are you dying from cancer or do you just have back pain?
Yeah.
I will tell you that so many times people just go, nope, I'm fine. And later, once there is trust built, we'll go, "Hey, by the way, I know you asked me this before, but yeah, I've actually had numbness through my leg. I can't feel anything for the last 5 weeks." And I'm like, "Well, why didn't you say that?" Well, the reason they didn't say it is I'm asking those tough questions, those red flag questions, at the time we have the least amount of trust, which is the first day, right?
Yeah.
It's idiotic. So if I can just build up that trust by sending a simple text message with a picture, I can save lives, and that's where I think automation really can help people. So anyways, man, I could go on and on because this is.
This is great.
So those automated service providers out there, man, if you can provide the script or the situation that supports those automations, or here's another
one. Next level.
If you know a message is going out 24 hours after we meet or something, and you go, "Hey, I got a full day today, but tomorrow morning I'm going to send you a survey because I know you're meeting me in the morning, right? 24 hours later, I go, "I'm going to send you a survey of how you're feeling. If you'd fill that out, it'd be great." And then 24 hours later, they get that survey. It's like, "Oh man, Chris did, he made the promise.
He followed on it.
Awesome. Now, what kind of work did the provider need to do? Nothing. Just say, I'm going to send you a survey tomorrow."
Oh man. Know your system, prep people for the system's performance, and then meet the people who go through the system, authentically, man. This is great. Josh, if our listeners want to find out more about you, connect with you, follow you, maybe come to your practice in Las Vegas, where should they go?
Yeah, probably the easiest way to find me, we have a website. It's more facing chiropractors and physical therapists called Clinic Gym Hybrid, clinicgymhybrid.com. They can email me at josh@clinicgymhybrid if they want to get a hold of me. That's probably the easiest way. And I'm on Facebook. I'm in actually some keep user groups and stuff like, what do they call that? Trolling, like looking for little tips and whatnot and going from there. But they can find me and whatnot. I just hope that those people that are automating those systems out there just realize if you do it right, it's so powerful. I hope this doesn't come off as like cheesy, but you could save lives just through the right automations. If you get that person to admit to their doctor, like, "Hey, I've had numbness," or "I've been peeing blood for the last 2 weeks," that changes the entire picture. Mm. And doing it the right way, man, you could really serve some people out there. You could literally save lives. So I hope they do it.
Quite the mandate. Hey, no pressure. Yeah. No pressure.
No pressure but whatsoever.
This is what we're here for, saving lives with automation. Who would have thought? Josh, thank you, man. Thank you so much for jumping on the podcast, man. It's greatly appreciated.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. It was a pleasure to finally meet you. And I'm so excited about what you bring in the world with the automated service provider, man. I think that is the future of every medical practice out there. It has to be. It has to be.
Yes.
Yeah. So
we are aligned there, my friend.
You're doing the work that we can't or we don't know how. So I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you, man. Appreciate you. And I'll see you online.
All right.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the All Systems Go podcast. If you enjoyed it, make sure that you're subscribed. At the time of recording, the All Systems Go podcast is free to subscribe to, and it can be found in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes are released every Thursday, so make sure you're subscribed so that you don't miss out. And while you're at it, please leave us a 5-star rating and review to show some love, but also to help future listeners more easily find the podcast so they can experience the value and goodness as well. We've compiled all resources mentioned on the podcast
as well as other resources that are extremely valuable and effective at helping you grow your marketing automation skills quickly. And you can access them all at allsystemsgopodcast.com. Thanks again for listening. And until next time, I see you online. Automate responsibly, my friends.